Dogtown showing artifacts, but I wanted to do something broader, and I also didn't want to repeat myself and have people come to my other talks. So I decided that Dogtown is just simply awesome in so many different ways, and that I would put this sort of survey of all the ways in which I felt Dogtown is awesome. And this is the result. This is sort of an informal talk, not a formal lecture, and not academic, I hope. The first question is, where is it? And this is a question that I've gotten in the farmer's market at the Friends of Dogtown booth, people coming up to sign up for a membership or to get on the mailing list. And a lot of people say, well, where is it? And it's actually two places. It's this smaller, darker circle, which is the area that the original colonial settlement was in, known as Dogtown Common. And this is on the John Mason's 1831 map of Cape Ann, so it's not exactly accurate. Then the larger circle is Dogtown in the broader sense, which is essentially the whole heartland of Cape Ann, the entire central watershed area. And now that the curtain is going up, we might be able to see the watershed. You can barely make out the watershed area in green in the middle. And so, in my view, Dogtown is not just a small area for the common Dogtown Common Settlement. It's just an awesome resource that occupies the entire center of Cape Ann, Cape Ann's watershed area.
Oh, honey, I just think you're right.
Thank you very much.
It's been great.
Here you can see a little bit better. That was just in time because this shows. On the left side of this, I'm afraid I don't have a pointer here to help with that. Let's see. Oh, it is here. Okay, so this is the area of Dogtown Common. This is the watershed area. And the red line demarcates the official boundary of Dogtown as it is currently defined. And you can see the roads around it. So that is where the answer to the question of where is Dogtown. Now, everybody has heard about the cellar holes. There are numerous historical maps of the cellar holes and their locations, and they're all different. And it has been an object of the research of contemporary students of the area to try to actually straighten the record out and figure out, okay, who did live in which cellar hole and so on. Exactly. And part of the problem is that settlement lasted for about 150 years. It's three or four generations of people. And so you had more than one family living in a given structure at different times. And that's what makes it confusing. If you go on the cellar hole tour, you will identify the cellar holes differently depending on which map you're using. This is a map made by Mark Carlotto, who's a researcher and cartographer who's been studying this question, and I think he has compared all of the historic sources and has figured out just about every hole accurately over time, which is the main thing. Cellar hole 22, for example, is very definitely the cellar hole of Joseph Riggs and his heirs. Can't really see the 22, but there's a 22 engraved on that stone, indicating that that's the location of that cellar hole. So the cellar holes have been messed up over many generations. They've been dug up, but both professional and amateur people have gone into them unofficially or illegally, and also officially. And so, as archaeological sites, they lack the kind of integrity that archaeologists to find in a site. But the stones are there for the cellar holes and for the foundations. This is an early one where you can see the shards of a pot in the lower left when they were first being dug up. You would not find any pots up there today. So, in the 1950s, the archaeologist Roland Wells Robbins came to dig he was especially interested in the mill that's over near the Rockport line, or it's actually in Rockport, I think, which was the first mill that was built out of Cape Ann. And Robbins had just finished excavating David Thoreau's cabin at Walden. And he had also been the chief archaeologist at the Saugus Iron Works. So everybody was very excited, and he did a lot of excavating in a couple of the cellar holes and in that mill. And he's just Dogtown had edible lichen on them, and it was part of the, it was one of the foods that the Native Americans ate. There are also some perched boulders. This is very hard to see, but there are three smaller stones underneath, and this boulder is perched on it. And that is a Native American construction. Their manner of sculpting the stone, this piece here, this was spalled off using fire. And when you find these great boulders that seem to have scoops around the bottom, they were scoops that were made by Native people using fire to make the rock maneuverable. For example, in the solar observatory on Pole Hill, they would scoop out the bottom, they scooped out the bottom of a large boulder and reduced it to gravel underneath, which therefore made the rock easy to maneuver. You could walk it, you could shimmy it, you could turn it a little bit to face the solstice or whatever. So, there's also this rocking stone, which a lot of people have found, but not realizing its significance. That is also a Native American stone, always used by Native Americans. Surely it's a glacial erratic, but then the boulder was worked, and it's on bedrock, and it was a rocking stone, so it was used to make noise. And the shaman would use it to announce the coming and going of spirits, and they also, by other accounts I read, they very likely used it to scare the novitiates who are out on their spirit quests. So that you're out in the woods trying to become a grown-up, and you hear this knocking in the bedrock, which resonates like a big echo throughout the whole area, and are suitably awed. To me, this is an awesome thing about Dogtown. Now, the other boulders of Dogtown that people regard as awesome is the Babson boulders. This is a map with the Babson boulder trail. It is a bit of a trip to actually see them all, especially if you try to see them in sequence. And some are more popular than others. There are some people who collect pictures of the stones when they find them. Because the forest has grown up so much since the time, even since the 30s when those boulders were carved, there a lot of them are obscured, and it's not as easy to come across them. It's like, the scrub has grown up around a lot of rocks, the rocks that the artist painted, for example. You have a hard time finding now. This is Roger Babson, and this rock says "Never Try, Never Win," which is actually the name of a musical coming up in the spring, which is going to be put on by Henry Allen. And these were out-of-work quarrymen that Babson hired to carve these rocks during the Great Depression, as I'm sure everybody knows. This one says "Courage." So when I think there's more than 20 of these, use your head. The artists also found these rocks. These boulders inspired artists such as Marston Hartley, and I think that's Peter's pulpit there. He had a very distinctive style. I just have a couple of examples of his work. These rocks you will have trouble finding, and one of the goals of the Friends of Dogtown is to restore the landscape around these rocks so that they are visible again the way the artists saw them. We'll see if that can happen. And again, I'm sorry, I'm not dark enough to see all the colors. John Sloan, and there's an exhibit at the Cape Ann Museum right now of John Sloan's painting. He was very taken with the rocks. This is in Riverdale. about Whale's Jaw, it's about his father, and he also makes references to other poets in Dogtown that you otherwise wouldn't realize. And if you'll permit me, I will, if I have the right glasses, I will read this.
Spirit tappings of some hollow tree, and there at night, all night,
1708 or 1709, and it had its heyday in the early 1800s, but it's got this span of time there. And again, drawn to the cellar holes. And the most recent writer to be drawn to the cellar holes is Mark Carlotto. I'm sorry, the book's titles that you can't really see on the
Island
right.
Woods.
The Island
Cellar
Woods.
Speak.
And the Cellar Speak. And he's written three books in all on this subject, and this most recent one is The Cellar Speak. Oh, am I on there? Still doing the thing of I shouldn't touch the. Oops. I'm trying to get the cursor back on there, but let's see.
Here it is.
Yep. Oh, is it? All right. That's a mystery to me how it does that. But it keeps having to go back and forth. All right. So this is The Cellar Speaks up here, and this is The Island Woods. The Cellar Speaks is his latest one, and he focuses on those cellar holes in a very novel way. He takes genealogical data, archaeological data, and all of his mapping data, and he reconstructs life in Dogtown Common intergenerationally, so that it's basically a community of people interacting within a complex social network. You're going through generations. You have people who grow up, move out of the home and start their own homes when they marry, and then when they're old, move back to the original home to be taken care of by the remaining, you know, they marry each other, they work for each other at jobs or whatever. And he's mapped this all out in a big social network grid of how all of the people who actually lived in the cellar holes interacted with each other over time. It's really pretty amazing in my opinion. So that's you know, another thing that makes it awesome. And then Dogtown is awesome all just for itself also. Naturalists and ecologists prize Dogtown's wetlands and habitats and native plants, and the landscapes include terminal moraines like this one, which is the famous Raccoon Rocks. Can't really see it in detail, but it's where the melting glacier dumped a large pile of rocks, and there are plenty of terminal moraines all over the Dogtown, and a geologist's dream. This is an example of a glacial heath. And this is what it looked like as late as 1920. It looked like this, with the boulders that have been dropped out of the glacier, and then just the grasses and shrubs that are growing up in the wake of the retreating glacier. So that grassland was kept cropped by the cattle and sheep and goats that the people kept, mostly cattle and sheep. Yes. This is a painting, and it probably dates to about 1910 or 1920.
And when did it look like this?
From before there were any colonists here up to about 1920, I'd say. And then what's happened since then is very interesting, and the naturalists explain. It's been the growth of successional forests, because the cattle and the sheep were no longer grazing. And so the little seedlings of trees and larger plants were able to grow because they weren't being eaten. And so we have the growth of this, what they call a successional forest, of oak, pine, and birch. And this is what's unusual about Cape Ann is the second and third growth forest, which exists only because there are not people and animals, using them. In the northern part of Dogtown is the Natty Memorial Woodland and also the Norton Memorial Forest that are managed this is a beautiful place to walk if you can get up that far into Dogtown, into the northern part. The system just crashed. Microsoft PowerPoint encountered a program problem and needs to close. So we will.
Intermission?
Peeper.
This is a spotted salamander. Have you seen it?
Seen peeper?
you go up by the reservoir in the early spring when it's wet under the leaves. After the first moonless night, you'll find these little creatures coming out of from their hibernation and going to the water. And they're special to Cape Ann, or special to New England. Then we have the box turtle. These are rare. They're protected. They're beautiful. They're here. This is a very rare bird, the Bicknell's thrush. And the hope is that by restoring some of the habitat in Dogtown, the traditional fauna and flora will come back because the rare birds are becoming rarer and rarer because their habitat has been changing. And if the habitat can be restored, if areas can be restored for it, then they can recover. There are also a lot of rare moths, and there are comeback species like eastern cottontail rabbits, which you might have in your yard.
Yes.
I have some in my yard. They seem to come and go, but they're adorable to watch. And we have other comeback species like the wild turkeys. You may have some of those too. And they're certainly plentiful in Dogtown. So this is another thing that to me makes Dogtown a pretty awesome place. And it would be great to keep it that way or help it remain that way. There are also rare plants that grow there. The lady slipper orchid on the left. The red trillium. The Trillium grandiflora, and there's also all these edible mushrooms that grow.
That
Amanita
muscaria on the bottom.
Sorry.
That Amanita muscaria.
No, it's not the red one.
Yeah.
No, it's an edible mushroom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It doesn't work edible. It doesn't. Does it? Apparently, the way to tell is from the underside or the color. And it is not. It's an old wives' tale that if it's been nibbled, it's safe. Because other animals might have ways of processing poison that we don't. So you have to watch out for that. I actually went mushroom hunting in Dogtown years ago with a fellow teacher from Yugoslavia who thought she knew all about mushrooms, and we collected a big basket of them. I really sweated it, but we cooked them. We ate them, and I lived. So, but I think you have to be careful. This is the dedication of the Natty Woodland. That's Ed Becker on the right, who's the president of the Essex County Greenbelt Association. And of course, that's Mayor Kirk in the middle there. And I actually don't know who the other people are, they were opening a trail into the Natty Woodland, which would be open to the public. And so that's the dedication of it. And the trails and landscapes are another thing that's awesome about Dogtown, in my opinion, because they wind throughout, and there are various loops you can take. There are various maps of all the trails. Some of them are very detailed, like the one that's put out by the Dogtown Advisory Committee. And others are more sketchy or more focused, like this one is just identifying must-see places. You know, go to these five places kind of thing, and here's how to get there. But the trails are a huge attraction. People go out there. People bring their dogs out there. Hiking in Dogtown is in the fifth grade curriculum in Boston Public Schools. They all go. The entire fifth grade goes into Dogtown, and they have science lessons.
Oh yeah, we do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, people do mountain biking there, they do rock climbing, they do geocaching. It's kind of an awesome place to do that in. And rock climbing challenges include Peter's Pulpit and Uncle Andrew's Rock, which says spiritual power. And these are vintage photos, but if you go there now, these are all surrounded by trees and covered with trees. So you could see how in just a short time, when the sheep and the cattle stopped grazing, you know, the forest grew up. As awesome as Dogtown is, it's really hard to believe that people vandalize the rocks. They dump trash, they cause damage with ATVs, they camp illegally, they party destructively. and they leave dog dew on the trails. It's very hard to believe. Maybe they don't realize how awesome the place is. So Friends of Dogtown is a citizens action group for, and their motto is to conserve and celebrate Dogtown and to educate people about its awesomeness. And they plan events and preservation activities. The next set of activities is called Dogtown Days, and it's coming up just in the next month, October 17th and 18th. And the first day, the 17th, takes place in the Cape Ann Museum, and it has these five presentations. These are slide presentations. So Mark Carlotto does Sellers of Dogtown. I do something on archaeology. Ed Becker does geology. Chris Leahy from Massapequa Audubon Society does the natural history of Dogtown. And then one of the docents at the Cape Ann Museum does a section on Dogtown and art. Afterwards, there's a cake and ale reception at the Sawyer Free Library in the Friend Room. And the cake and the ale has been brewed by the Cape Ann Brewery using ingredients that were available to the colonists. And the cake is a colonial recipe. And we're planning an event where we have a benefit dinner using all recipes that were written about by the people who lived in Dogtown, who left records of what they ate. We are especially looking forward to cabbage soup, for example. Swamp Mary's apple cake, or what is it? Swamp Mary's swamp apple cake. Maybe it's swamp apples instead of Swamp Mary. I don't know. Then on the second day is tours. This is on the 18th. They go from 10 to noon. There are four tours led by different people, and they all start from a different place. So if you were going on a tour, you'd have to choose one of the tours. And the program for the event has a map showing where each tour meets, where you can park, and where you meet to go on the tour. So Chris Leahy leads the natural history tour. You can bring binoculars and he'll show you the birds and so on. Mark Carlotto will do the cellar tour. Ted Tarr and Noel Mann will go do the Bass and Boulder tour. Slow because Ted has trouble breathing. You know, it'll be a very casual tour. And the Drawing a Seeing tour by Shep Abbott. This is for people who want to do journaling or sketching. And he'll take you into Dogtown, and you'll have an opportunity to sort of sit around and think or dream and draw. And he has places that he wants to show people for that. And families are welcome, and children are welcome, but not the dogs on this occasion for the tours. The Friends of Dogtown has this website with there's more information about the events and activities there. There's also a Facebook page. And Mark Carlotto has developed an app, a mobile app for Dogtown where you never get lost. It works just like Google Maps.
Wow.
So if you have your cell phone in Dogtown with you, you can go to the website, click on the app, and it downloads automatically for free. And it shows you where you are, and then as you move along the trail, the little ball moves to show that, yes, you're getting nearer to the road, or yes, you're getting nearer to Whale's Jaw or wherever, you never get lost again. So this is going to be big because every summer people get lost in Dogtown, and it's a chore for the police to have to rescue them. They have to go out on their ATVs, or else what they do is honk their horns and shine their lights and to help the people orient themselves to try to get out. So I think it'll be a very, very good thing. So. Friends of Dogtown is sort of renewing the effort to restore and conserve and celebrate this place, but it continues a very long tradition among writers, poets, artists, nature lovers, bird watchers, photographers, hikers, and residents, all the people who over the generations have loved Dogtown, and they grasp its meaning for both the past